Hello, this is Liz Dunshy, Managing Editor of CCR Corp. Welcome to our podcast, and hello to all of the wonderful members of CompensationStandards.com who are listening today. I'm talking today with Stuart LaPayokar and Cooley's Brad Goldberg. Brad is a partner at Cooley in New York City, whose practice is focused on advising management, boards of directors, and board committees on a wide range of matters, including SEC and stock exchange reporting and disclosure requirements, board and executive compensation, corporate governance, shareholder proposals, the impact of proxy advisory services, and responses to formal and informal SEC inquiries. His practice also involves advising companies on a range of matters relating to corporate aircraft and private plane use, which is how we have come to be talking here today. Stuart is an attorney based in Fort Lauderdale that devotes his law practice to corporate aircraft transactions. He counsels corporate and individual clients, foreign and domestic, on issues relating to the acquisition, leasing, registration, and financing of new and pre-owned jet aircraft, including fractional aircraft, and including implementing tax-efficient structures, related FAA and DOT regulatory matters, regulatory evaluation of operations, personal use issues, and compensation-related SEC issues, and the development of aircraft utilization policies in connection with the use of business aircraft by public companies. Stuart is past chair of the National Business Aviation Association's Tax and Regulatory Committee. He's written articles and editorials. He's been quoted in the press, cited to by a federal appellate court, and he's lectured on various topics in business aviation. Stuart is devoted to helping aircraft owners and operators find solutions to challenges that they face on a daily basis. He hosts an internet radio show, Plane Talk Radio. Make sure to check it out. I listened to a few episodes myself, and I can confirm it's both educational and entertaining. So welcome, Stu and Brad, and thank you very much for talking with me today.
Thank you, Liz. Thanks.
All right. Well, it's been an interesting time, as it always is, I guess, for corporate use of aircraft. But it seems like there's been some extra attention on it lately because of the pandemic. What effect did COVID have on the demand for business aircraft, and why? And what does the market look like today? Brad, do you want to start?
Yeah, sure. From my perspective, I've definitely seen an uptick in interest over the past year or so from clients who are exploring private plane use for their executives, as well as executives who are looking to purchase their own planes. And I think COVID has certainly amplified the health and safety benefits of flying private, and that's got to be a big part of the reason for those companies looking into this. But I don't know, Stuart, what are you seeing on your front? I know you're more active in sort of the acquisition space.
Yeah, I mean, initially, the market was frozen. Companies were focusing on their businesses, how to get their folks working, and obviously their health and safety. Aircraft owners that were selling were not really capitulating to these bottom-of-the-barrel offers they were getting. But prices did drop, I'd say 20 to 25% in the initial 90 days of the COVID period. Then demand increased and started to outstrip supply. I mean, inventory of pre-owned aircraft, you know, rapidly decreased, resulting in a seller's market. Obviously, the reasons for wanting to fly on an aircraft that you have control over, you know, focuses on health, on airports, you know, not wanting executives interacting with the public in airports, exposure in commercial aircraft. And we had also many first-time buyers who were individuals entering the market, and also executives buying aircraft for their own use. And today, I mean, still high demand, still a seller's market, still very limited supply of pre-owned aircraft. And, you know, new aircraft take a couple years to produce. So that's really not all that relevant to, you know, current demand.
Interesting. Sounds like the used car market on steroids. So that's interesting. So let's talk about business use versus personal use of corporate aircraft. Stuart, I'll start with you for this question. What are one or two steps that companies and their directors and officers can take to make sure that they're not running afoul of FAA, tax, or disclosure regulations? And then the follow-up question, what happens if they mess up?
So it's a pretty complex area. I mean, unfortunately, the FAA, the IRS, the SEC don't really speak the same language. I mean, the FAA's focus is on safety, the IRS on collecting tax revenue, and the SEC on, you know, shareholder transparency and fairness. You know, one of the primary reasons for the tax issues is that under the FAA rules, reimbursement is fairly well limited for an aircraft operating under the typical non-commercial rules that corporate aircraft operate under. And that results in, you know, for personal use at least, fringe benefit value imputation and a requirement to disclose the incremental cost on the in the proxy materials. I would say, you know, be sure that the structure is compliant with the FAA rules, especially with respect to reimbursement. There are obviously fines and penalties if the FAA brings an enforcement action. And obviously the IRS isn't happy if they're not getting the tax revenue from the fringe benefit imputation, among other things. I guess that those would be my suggestions.
Good points. Brad, do you have thoughts to add to that?
Yeah, I think, you know, in my space, the SEC disclosure space, I really think the critical aspect here is putting in the right framework from the beginning to be able to track and characterize the flights as business versus personal. I think a well-crafted aircraft utilization policy, you know, is a good first step. I've found that if companies take the time up front to sort of map out what they think the potential trip routes are going to be and who might be flying where at certain times and when and why, and classifying those types of trips up front can be very helpful. And, you know, if you get it wrong, you know, the SEC is certainly zeroed in on this area. I think, you know, we've all seen several PERCS-related enforcement actions in the last couple of years. And so it's critical, I think, that the classification up front and the controls are in place to be able to make the decisions as to whether or not it's personal business, because that drives ultimately whether or not, you know, there's a PERC and an incremental cost that needs to be disclosed. I'd also say that it's not just the SEC that's looking into this. There are plaintiffs firms out there who are making shareholder demands. Those cases tend to focus actually on the situations where the executive owns the plane and then it being reimbursed for the business use of the plane by the company. But those raise the same issues. It's essentially a mirror image as far as classification, you know, because if you misclassify a personal flight as business, then you're potentially leaving out a PERC.
Yeah.
I think, Brad, with the policy, you know, if you have a policy, which, you know, public companies should have, you want to stick to the policy. And that's one of the things that I think the plaintiffs' firms are looking at as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's all really good practical advice. Thank you both. And I think the other issue you mentioned, the SEC and the plaintiffs' firms, of course, the IRS and the FAA, but it seems like company or executive footfalls can also attract just a lot of negative publicity because there's this sentiment right now of executives getting special treatment and how the board is handling oversight of that and those types of things. So it's definitely a sensitive area in a lot of different ways. So Stuart also mentioned that the regulators in this space may not be speaking the same language, which is a really great point. How can Business Aviation Council and SEC Disclosure Council best work together to make sure that the board minutes and public disclosures are accurate? Brad, do you want to start that one?
Yeah, so I mean, I think Stuart will agree with this. Whenever I get an inbound call, you know, with questions about planes and PERCS and how to classify flights or do we need a policy or not, I almost immediately recommend that you know, we get Stewart involved, just because the space is so complicated and all of the overlapping rules and regulations and how they don't necessarily all function in the same way. If, especially in the context of when there's a decision made that the company is either going to require the executive to reimburse for personal use, or the company is going to want to reimburse the executive for the business use of their plane. I think it's just critical in those scenarios to have aviation counsel involved, because, you know, I've learned enough from Stewart over the years to advise on the issues, but Stewart is really the person you need an to structure the actual arrangements and the contractual, you know, arrangements, which are different in the different contexts and how the reimbursement works and, you know, and how you want to approach those things. And so I just think it's critical to get him involved or someone like him involved, you know, from the outset, along with your disclosure counsel, and have them working together.
Yeah. It's not an area for dabbling, it sounds like.
No. many traps for the unwary.
Stewart, do you have thoughts to add to that? What can we do? What can the Disclosure Council do to help you?
Well, first of all, Brad, the check is in the mail. secondly, I would say that we, you know, involve us and Brad with respect to the SEC on other issues at the inception of the transaction, so that you can, so the company can understand the rules. We can all be in sync. We can all understand what's going to happen and how it's going to be described in various places and how it's going to be treated. We find a lot of times companies move on with the acquisition, but later find out that they can't satisfy their objectives because the operation wasn't structured in the right way. They can't get the reimbursement that they had expected. The disclosure is going to be different than they planned. So I think the best advice is to get us involved, or, you know, get your team involved that has knowledge in the space at the inception of the transaction instead of waiting.
Good to know. Hopefully our audience will take heed of that advice. I alluded to this a little bit ago, but corporate jet use can attract an outsized amount of attention as a perk. Are there things to say or not to say that can reassure shareholders that private travel is in the company's best interest, Brad?
I mean, I think it's, you know, it's always going to be, I think, sort of a hot button issue, the thing, the perk, the one perk that people find, you know, the most sort of interesting or fascinating to call over. But I think there are a few things that, in my mind, you can say or do that can dampen some of that reaction. And one of those is many companies will actually conduct an independent security study, you know, that will often conclude that the executive should and must fly on a private plane for business and personal, all business and personal travel, because there's a bona fide business oriented security concern. And if you're able to, you know, jump through those hoops and have that study done, you know, that's a pretty good rationale to be able to put forth in the proxy, even if you've got the perk disclosure to deal with. In addition to the security concerns, you know, I think the other things that companies will typically highlight are, you know, the benefit of increased efficiency and productivity that the private plane allows. And then certainly with even more so with COVID, the health and safety benefits.
That makes sense. So you mentioned a security study. I'm going to throw a question at both of you here. You mentioned a security study, and we were just talking about how it's important to involve aviation counsel at the outset of planning as well. So from start to finish, like how long does it take first to do this security study? If a company is going to do that and start planning ahead, how long does that piece take usually? And then how long does the planning process and completing the aviation deal take? Like if a company starts to think about, oh, maybe we want to pursue some sort of private plane situation, how how long is that timeline before it actually is something that they can use on a typical basis?
What do you think, Stuart? I mean, on the acquisition side,
I think in this environment, in all likelihood, the transaction piece will get ahead of a lot of what we want to be doing, of what the planning is for a variety of these issues.
Hmm.
Because the aircraft that are put up for sale on the various ways that the brokers advertise them, et cetera, are having multiple offers the second day that, or the first day that they're out on the market. And
so
if there's an intention to acquire an aircraft, obviously you have to decide which kind you need, what suits your mission. Plan as far in advance as you can before you start looking. Because once you start looking for the one you want, you're going to have to move very quickly.
Wow, that's good to know. So the jet deals are moving at jet speed right now.
No doubt about it.
Stuart, on a or like a fractional NetJets program or something like that, that's a much shorter thing they can get done in a much quicker way, fair to say.
The issues are the same.
Yeah.
The documentation is more standardized, but the issues are the same. The personal use issues are the same. The reimbursement issues are the same. Remember, in a fractional program, you're owning an undivided interest in an aircraft, which is why they call it fractional, and you're engaging the program provider to provide you with the management services, support services, crew, maintenance, et cetera, but you know, effectively, the company's operating the aircraft in most cases, and the issues are the same.
Very helpful. Thank you. Are there ways to increase security or prevent competitors from tracking whether a company is working on a transaction or an acquisition, Stuart?
You know, as everyone knows, because you probably track your family's travels when your kids are coming back from school or your spouse is on a trip.
Or there was a kid tracking Elon Musk recently, right?
Exactly. So there's online tracking. That's one of the examples I was going to give, which is, you know, you've got someone who is tracking Elon Musk's aircraft. We had a situation where we represented a professional, the owner of, how am I going to put this? The owner of a professional sports team, and the press was able to sort of get a sense of what coach he was going to hire to replace the existing coach by tracking where his airplane was going. And, you know, it made stops in the places you'd expect.
Wow.
In terms of colleges and whatnot. So the FAA does have a fairly simplified process that allows you to essentially have them have these providers block the data from going out to the public and from going out to these different providers. They have a different program for blocking what we call ADS-B transmissions, which is another form of data transmission that aircraft make to air traffic control. That's a little more difficult to do. But, you know, there are some simple things to do. Use a random registration number for your aircraft instead of one that is known to have been used by the company for 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
Companies tend to have these numbers that they like. They, you know, maybe their birth date of the founders or some other special date that the company went public or whatever, and they just continue to use them every time they replace the airplane. They just move the number from one airplane to the next. And, you know, the name of the owner can be made more opaque using a variety of methods, you know, using owner trust registration. The bottom line, and what we tell clients is, you can make it more difficult to find out who the owner or operator is, but it's not impossible. Can't make it impossible. So it's a question of how deep you want to go and how much effort and expense you want to go to.
Yeah, well, it sounds like it's something definitely for public companies to be thinking about, you know, to protect sensitive information that could affect the stock price. So That is really good advice. Last question before we wrap up. Is there one piece of advice, I'll direct this one to Stuart. Is there one piece of advice that you find that you almost always give to public companies that are considering an aircraft deal?
I would say put together a good team of experienced professionals, you know, aviation, legal, SEC, tax, you know, be conservative. And I think always assume that, you know, there's no hiding if you operate or own a business aircraft, so plan accordingly.
For me, on the SEC disclosure side, and just from my own personal experience and how I've seen these things play out, I think this is not an area to be aggressive on your front, you know, with respect to how you're classifying certain flights as personal versus business. I think it behooves companies to err on the side of caution, be conservative. I think it's, you know, in hindsight, you're going to much rather prefer that you perhaps feel like you overdisclose some personal use of the plane than, you know, having to deal with the distraction costs and potential, you know, SEC implications of a investigation and enforcement action down the road.
Yeah.
Because again, this is an area that they're particularly focused on. And so I think, you know, you should go into it expecting that there may be somebody looking at your disclosure, in the tires. And so I think it's just playing it safe is the better approach here.
Yeah. Yeah. There are some areas where you can be a little bit more aggressive, and this is not one of those areas. Well, thank you both again for joining me today. This has been super informative and interesting. And thank you again as well to all of our listeners on this podcast. Have a great day.